Abreu from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another episode. Today we are recording episode 146, if I got the count correctly. And if I didn't, then somebody will correct me, I'm sure. Today I have the distinct pleasure and the honor to have with me Anna Albinson. Anna is the CEO of a company called Gridly out of Stockholm. Today she joined me from Sweden, and I am located in Canada, where it is 7 a.m. in the morning, and for Anna it's 1 in the afternoon. Anna, thank you so much for joining me. Pleasure to have you with me on the show, and I look forward to getting to know you personally and get to know a little bit of what you do and record an exciting episode for our audience. Thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. And 140 plus episodes. That's pretty impressive.
Absolutely. Just to anecdotally, today I have a marathon of recording episodes back to back till the end of the day. Today, I probably record about 8, I think, today. I don't know.
My God.
Every hour, there's one. And I have fun with them. Like, if I didn't really have fun with them, I wouldn't have done it this way. But I think the calendar ran out on me and ended up with 8 episodes recording today. So
then we will have a nice Christmas break after that, right?
I hope so. Nice Christmas break for everybody. I wish everybody a good Christmas break. Hopefully, some people, those who can take some time to relax and rejuvenate and recharge the batteries, as they say. Again, welcome to the show. Let's get to know you first. And if you don't mind, the first question I ask the guests on this show is everybody's got a story. So let's start with your story. Can you tell us your story?
Yeah, sure. And to start with, I've been the CEO of Gridly for 1 year now. And that is actually my first job within localization. And we can come back to that. My background is within different kind of SaaS companies. I come from the commercial side of businesses, so I've been focusing mostly on business development, sales, and marketing. For the last 10 years before joining Gridly, I've been focused within data and analytics mainly, working in global companies. So not having any experience of the localization industry, I can truly say that I can really feel the need for localization. I almost didn't know that the industry existed before, but I've had all the pain points that localization now is solving. I've had back in the days when I worked with scaling different kind of B2B SaaS solution out in the world. So if I knew that Gridly or similar tools were around, probably it would have made my work much easier.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about your journey, because it's very interesting. When I was going through your information, you've done work in sales, marketing, operation. It's very rare that we'd see some people going between, specifically around sales and operation. Like, how did you manage that? Generally, people would say, well, if you're in one track, you can't move to the other track and the opposite.
Yeah, but I think that what they have in common is that they are all customer focused, right? So you need to understand that you need to interact with customers in all those kind of functions. So I think that is a part of it. But of course, there is a lot of differences in those kind of roles. But what is important here, I think, is that I have made those shifts when I have been within different kind of companies mainly. So starting within sales, moving into marketing, moving on to business development and maybe running some customer operations. But those shifts have been done within the same kind of companies. So I think it's also a lot about, understanding the business, having different kind of perspectives. And I have also been a leader for many, many years, different size of teams. And that is an expertise that you can use in any kind of business area where you can really utilize that if that is one of your area where you really like to perform and where you like to be. So I can recommend anyone that would like to make those shifts. I would really recommend it because you get new perspectives all the time. But if you're going to do it, try to make it happen within the company that where you already have some knowledge about the business and about how you run your company. And I can say, just finalizing this, if we take marketing and sales, for instance, I think that in many companies, especially within SaaS companies, everyone thinks that those processes would be smooth between marketing and sales because they are actually like running processes that are very well integrated. But in many companies, it's very difficult to get this really tight and seamless collaboration between sales and marketing. So coming from both sides, that could be an advantage sometimes.
Absolutely. You didn't know the localization industry existed, almost. You didn't know that localization industry existed. Now that you are in the localization industry, what is your impression so far?
So first of all, when I how I ended up in the localization industry was that my kind of favorite recruiter, she reached out and she said, I found your new job, Anna. And I didn't even know what it was all about. But looking into it, really understanding the business and where we are with content operations, with translations, what's happening with, you know, moving from service into technology. It's a super interesting industry. And it's not only interesting, it's also an industry that is growing heavily. So I think that the industry now is in a very interesting time. I mean, we have seen these kind of shifts, you know, in many different industries and, back in the days as well. But what is happening right now within our industry, I think it's super, super interesting. Moving from service into tech, adding some AI layer, the increased demand of digital solutions that needs to be scaled into different kind of markets. Oh my God, it's such a cool industry that I wish I had known more about previously as well.
Now, you know, that's a very interesting point from service to tech. Do you foresee the industry moving from being a service industry to a technology company, to a technology industry?
I think that is already happening, and it has been happened for the last years that, you know, the need for localization is growing. So there is room both for service and tech in there. And I think both are needed. But of course, there is a shift. If we have been at 90% service and 10% technology or something like that, that is now moving around. Tech is taking a bigger piece of the cake and has done so lately, but that will probably be the case moving forward. I'm pretty sure about that.
So my impression is, and I've been in the industry just like you, I came from outside the industry. I'm a tech person. I was in technology pretty much the early part of my career. And by accident, I was coming on a flight, actually coming from one city to another. Somebody sits beside me on a flight, convinced me to go work for a company in an industry I did not know existed. 23 years later, here I am, left to my employer, 2 months ago now, and I'm an independent consultant. But the idea here is that when I came into the industry, and I always thought that this is, I mean, based on what I've seen so far, there's 19,000 companies in the industry, and they're all fragmented. Small, medium, large size company. And I shifting the industry is like almost shifting the, I don't want to say the Titanic because that hit an iceberg, but shifting a large vessel in a water that you probably need to take a little bit of time to shift it. But to go from, and it would be logical to see an entire industry transform from being a service industry to a technology based industry. And what I mean by technology is an actual technology delivery services. But it seems to me, and that's based on, you know, the many conversation I've had on this channel, at least, and the side conversation I've had with other people, is that the industry uses technology to create advantages in their services, meaning that I use AI in my operational model to increase margin. It's about prices are dwindling in an industry that the operator are forced to create some sort of a tool to allow them to create some profitability in their operational models. Which means that we're still using technology in its format currently in a way that just make me, you know, that's the subline message from everybody I talk to, just make me get into a little bit more proficiency in my operation. But you know, I agree with you, if the vision is to, which I agree with you, it should be the vision to move into providing technology as a technology solution, plug in technology into the processes of businesses. So from your side, are you seeing it as a pure SaaS solution being provided, or are you seeing it as a technology that allows people to create a little bit more efficiency in their
Yeah. So the way I see it is that there is a big need for both technology and humans to work hand in hand and the service part of things. So that is sure. Gridly is pure technology. We are only the SaaS solutions. We are not the service provider at all. But we, without collaborating with LSPs and, you know, collaborating with our clients close with their localization team, I mean, it would be very difficult to only utilize the technology. So that is for sure that it needs to work hand in hand. But what we also see is, of course, that our customers, a lot of things are happening within those companies. There is a high belief that technology could really take over this space. There is a lot of investments in new technology, in new workflows, how to do this going forward. And I would say, this is not really correct, but that is probably an easier part than to change everyone working within this industry. Because it is just, we as human beings, we don't want to change the way we do things. That's natural. We would like to continue doing and work the way we've always done. I mean, that's the case. With technology and processes, you can at least force them in to a company or into a process or tool. But we also need to understand that we need to deal with humans. And I think that some specific roles and companies are going to grow heavily on the service side. And that is those that can manage both the linguistic part of things, but also be what I would say tech and AI friendly. From my side and what I see, that is still pretty rare out there to find those companies that we could really work tight with and that could make like AI automations and humans be the perfect match, so to say. And we need that. Otherwise, Ridley's only tech. We need that side of the business as well. And we need to build it through different kind of partnerships or and together with our clients.
And have you looked into agile integration of a human into the process, into the AI process or technology process in general, just not just AI?
Yeah, and what we are looking into, the roles and the what is needed the most, I would say. I don't know if this is a role or if it exists, but I would call it like the AI orchestrator, something like that. The one that is like, I've seen a few people, I don't know exactly what kind of title they have, but we have that with collaboration with one of our LSPs. And that is to be able to really, being able to handle prompting, to understand the new workflows, to really accept AI, to accept the LLMs in the play, to accept where should humans come into play and how to orchestrate all of the content operations, but in a tech and AI friendly way. I think there is a huge need for that. So for those that think that the service side is going down and there are no opportunities and translators will not be relevant going forward, I think they will be super relevant, but they need to adapt to the new reality.
Yeah, absolutely. This is what I hear always on this channel, the human element of our, the professional element of our industry is always going to be needed. And, you know, the industry seems to me, the conversation seems to me centered around, it never really, I understood why that the industry always talks about like the top five, maybe 10 languages in our conversations, in our dialogues. But the global industry has over 500 languages in it. And we sort of like, we only focus on the top 10, maybe top 10. I'm exaggerating probably a little bit. Maybe the conversation generally tend to center around top five, I think between 5 and 10. Those are the most common languages that, you know, we can exercise AIs onto them. We can put people onto them. We can put resources onto them because they're larger in volume. But if you're talking like to somebody from sub-Saharan Africa or other countries, you know, they don't have the luxury of that, you know, resources of data, technology, processes, but they're still relevant. They're still needed. They're still fabric, you know, part of the fabric of our society. And so there is still miles to go, I would say, in our journey. But you're right. I talk a lot about, you know, the exact instance where you plug in the professional in the process. So you've got a process of technology end to end, but you want to be able to plug in the professional translator at the right step, at the right moment in the process to make sure that we're maintaining integrity of the content, sustaining quality, because the second conversation that always comes up is, are we sacrificing quality for speed, for economic reasons? And are we degrading the language in general, some languages in general, by using the easy way out, basically technology? So what is your feeling around that?
Yeah, and I would say it's like, it's very relevant what you say about, you know, how many languages are ready for the LLMs and for, you know, really proper AI translation. That we need to take into consideration, of course, and humans needs to be more in the loop, some, you know, within some languages and might not be needed as much in others. Still, I think that we are in a situation where we really need to understand that it's so easy to think that, you know, it's so easy to translate even the big languages with different kind of LLMs. But we know that it's much more complex. everyone working in this industry knows how difficult it is to have proper translation with LLMs, also using a platform or working AI first. It's not an easy one. We know that we have hallucinations, we have a different kind of errors, we have not the right kind of context, we end up with a lot of different errors. So humans would probably need to be around for a very long period of time, but it's also about the level, the quality of the content. We have a lot of gaming companies as our customers. The ones running more easy mobile games, they can almost run from, have AI in play from start to beginning, almost no humans involved at all. But if you work with the really big games, the AAA games, the high quality games, there is a lot of humans involved as well. So it's also about, what quality is needed for this content and how much can I use technology and AI to make sure that we keep quality in the language and in the product as well. So it's different from different kind of content, I would say.
And you know what? I'm also hearing, I'm not sure if it's the same for you, but I'm also hearing societal impact on language degradation. There are some groups of languages that perhaps, if we don't maintain their quality, they're going to be gone. At least from a quality perspective, from the way we impact the society, not just necessarily translating a document for a user manual or a website. You know, we're talking about the day-to-day use of the language. In a lot of cases, you would think you want to maintain integrity and high quality and preserve these languages because you don't want them diluted over time. And this is where I'm very cautious in the way that I'm like you, like using AI, but using it with the cautious mind and how we are going to apply it and where are we going to apply it. And we talk a lot about on ethical use of AI in a lot of contexts. So in this case here, from a how we use AI, it's going to be really impacting many aspects, not just from a commercial point of view as a localization industry, but from the society impact on how we are going to be using it, our languages. And I'm just speaking just to give you an example. For instance, there are some Aboriginal languages where I live, only spoken by a handful of people. If this goes to AI or we don't treat it carefully, those languages would probably erode and they'd be gone. You know, as a localization industry, one of our primary objectives should be preserving languages.
Yeah, of course. And I think also, that's true. And then I also think that it's a lot about content and instructions for the AI, of course, because it's just to go to yourself. We don't like when things are too AI perfect anymore. Everyone were running their CVs and make them perfect and send them for recruitment.
Bot-to-bot discussion.
But it's really, we really need to make sure that the content is, something is happening when we are, seeing the content. It's also about emotions and humans and everything. And if it's just perfect, and if you don't can build in the art of language or really, make it human, the content is not good enough. And we work a lot with gaming companies. That is our main industry for our platform. And what they are selling is an experience. So you need to have a gaming experience. Something needs to happen in your body. You need to be excited our customers are really selling some kind of experience to the client. If the gamers don't want to use the game, it will not be around anymore. So, the localization process, just as an example, it needs to be so relevant for the gamer. And if we work with AI and if we use technology, we also need to make sure that the AI has the right kind of context to work in to be able to deliver content that also is really human driven and that really can affect humans and their emotions, to be honest. And that is very difficult to run through machine and not having any humans involved
100%.
At all.
Yeah, you need a content that stirs up emotion and excitement. And normally machines are ones and zeros generally, and we have not yet been able to understand or to figure out how to vector into a database emotions of human nature.
No.
Not yet. I'm assuming quantum computing will help in that regard, but we're far away from that. So.
Yeah, what we can do, I mean, so far what we can do is that we can at least give instructions to the LLM. I mean, if I look into gaming again, because that's our industry, we can of course let the LLM knows this character. I mean, what is like the characteristics for this specific, you know, and make sure that they end up in the right kind of context, they use the right kind of tone and the right kind of language out of that description. But still, I mean, it's very difficult. It's not easy to have that full process without humans in the loop.
True. Absolutely. So for somebody from the outside the industry, from outside localization industry, how do you describe Gridly to them?
So Gridly is an AI first localization platform, is what I would say first. And that is, if you have any like digital product, any SaaS solution, a mobile app that you need to scale into new markets and you need to adapt it into that specific market, Gridly could be your partner in that. So that is the short story. And what we actually do within Gridly is, of course, that we work a lot with translation. It's one of the processes we have in our tool. But we are actually on the whole process from like creating content to deliver content. And the localization process is one of the big processes in Gridly, but we can do more. And if I would talk to someone that is a little bit more into the localization industry, I will also add that Gridly is a content management system from the beginning, so a CMS. But now this year, we have also added TMS and CAT, so in the same kind of platform. So you can have everything within the full localization process in Gridly. So that is pretty unique.
It is very unique. I mean, we always talked about or at least everybody in the localization industry has been aspiring to move up the food chain through the content creation or the content origination, from the content origination to publishing. And I always talked about this early on in my career in this industry, that if you look at the trajectory of anything content related outside of our industry, and you look at all the dollar spends or all the budgets that has been allocated from, take anything, you know, developing a mobile app or website or whatever it is, and you look at the budget segmentation or the budget items in that project, and you will see that immediately that localization translation is the tiny little piece toward the end, and that's it. So the bulk of the budget or the bulk of the project is being spent on other things, design, content creation, etc. And the industry always wanted to get to that level to say, okay, we can do more than just creating content. Now, it has been happening. Many companies have been inching toward that objective, but nothing in a systematic way. And I'm glad to see it. Like when somebody says, you know, our system is content management system, plus a CAT tool, plus other things that helps you facilitate translation. This is good because now we're making solid steps into that journey where the content originated.
Yeah, that's true. And I think so. Since we have the content in the platform for the product, so we have all the content in there for our customers within our CMS. So that is like the starting point. That also makes us, you know, we have a lot of knowledge about the product or the game or whatever it might be, which also makes it easier for us, of course, to build this kind of context if we would like to have AI to work within there. But it could also be translators. I mean, everyone is working in the same place. Mm-hmm. Within Gridly, you have like the one source of truth. So tech and AI and also humans are working in the platform together. But the core thing here is the CMS, because then we have all the content for the product in the platform. And that's where the tech and, you know, people would like to work with the content together. So for us, that is a really big strength in the market. But what we also see is that customers would like to have flexibility. So some of our customers, they use our TMS and CAT functionality, but others will run with their own, and then we need to have integrations. And we offer the flexibility because we also know what it takes to, if you look into translators, for instance, to have them move from one platform to another, it's not an easy thing to just make sure that everyone is on board and understand a new interface and everything. Within Gridly, you can still have the flexibility to use other types of CATs and TMS, but everyone is using the CMS as their foundation.
And from your customer perspective, I'm assuming because now you have a content management system, because one of the main dilemma that the industry deals with is content chaos. I don't know what else to call it. But
yeah, and that will increase with it.
So structure, that gives you the ability to structure it, at least. You put it in some sort of a pattern that it would be easier for your team to deal with on the tech side and on the translation side. Am I correct?
Yeah. So it's like a string-based platform. So the name Gridly comes from the name grid, a grid like an Excel sheet or a Google sheet. So that is like the primary UI that we use. And then we have different kind of grids, and we have the one source of truth of content in the platform. That content comes from, you know, you can import or export, but many customers would like to have some kind of integration. So for gaming companies, for instance, Unity and Unreal, that are like the gaming engineers, engines out there, we of course are integrated with them. So they is so Gridly easily can access the content. But it's string based, it's like an Excel sheet, but it can do so much more than Excel, of course. But that's the way we organize it in different kind of grids and branches and so on within in the platform, depending on the customer's needs.
So in your opinion, like, why the traditional CMS and TMS setups are breaking down as company scales up? I guess this is where the integration can solve the problem, I'm assuming. Am I correct?
Yeah, I think so. I think integration will be solving a lot of problems. But I think also if I look into at least some of our bigger competitors on the TMS or CAT side, they have a long history of running these kind of platforms. Mm-hmm. They are pretty advanced, but they are also based on human first approach. And I think that will become their biggest challenge going forward. Gridly comes with an AI first approach. That means that our biggest challenge right now is that we sometimes are like, you know, before our own market. So for us to have AI first translation within Gridly, of course, that can, you know, some companies don't want to use AI at all. They would like to start working with translators directly in the platform and, you know, do that kind of processes. And we don't believe that that will be the future, to really, you know, have humans in the loop as a starting point. So we have taken a bet, but and we think that that will be, you know, of course, the best way long term. But right now, there is, I should be honest, there is a struggle with us being very AI first thinking, and where some of our clients and customers are in their own process of becoming AI first thinking.
You know, it's pretty innovative to say we're AI first, because many companies would, even now, they will talk about AI in hush-hush tone kind of thing.
Like, yeah.
We all, you know, we use professional services, and I heard these conversations many times.
Yeah.
Professional services. We value our translators. I get it. I value our translators. God bless them. They do a great job. Nobody's debating that. But I love how you're positioning this AI first. Like, let's unmask, you know, the charade here. Everybody uses AI, but nobody says they're using AI. But you came up first and you says, I'm using AI and AI first. And if we need a human, we're going to plug a human into the process. That's quite courageous. And you're right. You said it. You've taken a bet on this one. How do you feel?
Yeah, I feel, as I said, long term, I know that we are on the right track. We will launch our new AI studio beginning of next year. And I'm pretty sure that that will be a deal breaker for companies that might not be AI friendly yet. But I agree with you. I see like different type of companies that I interact with every day and every week. I see those that would not like to use AI at all. They fully avoid AI. They are focusing on risk and compliance and the translators, mainly like big companies. They force me to make, you know, put in some clause in the contract that their content will never touch AI. That still exists. And that could be a bit surprising for me. That is one type of customer. Another type is where I think the majority are, is they are like in some kind of experiment. They try to see how AI can improve their processes. There is a project coming from the management team that they should work more with AI. And here I think that the localization part of things is one of the areas where companies are like first in line if they have a localization department, so to say, because everyone knows that that AI are pretty good with languages. So that's why you end up running experiments in that field. And then the third type, I would say, it's the really big companies that are more like enterprise architects or something like that. They would like AI to work end to end. They put it into their core processes. They try to do this like being a leader and really like applying this into to the core of their businesses. So it's very difficult. You can be in the morning, you can have a meeting with someone that tells me that, you know, AI is not in play. And then in the evening, you can have a meeting with someone telling us that we are moving too slow and that we need to be have more courage and we need to implement more, you know, AI features in the product. So it's a balance. And, you know, we have taken our bet within Gridly. And I think we are on the right track. And of course, I hope so. But let's see, the future will tell.
The future would tell, indeed. Mm-hmm. You know, you reminded me of many technologies that came along, and initially people rejected the technology. Imagine, you know, telling somebody, you know, take a little plastic card, go to a machine somewhere, put it into that machine and get some money out of it. I'm assuming people would be crazy saying, what do you mean? I got to go get money from a box? No. I got to go talk to the teller.
Yeah. Or when I told my kids that, you know, back in the days when I was going to, you know, have a phone call with a friend, I had to go to the phone that was, you know, locked into the wall. And you had to sit there and no one else could talk to anyone else until I have finished my call, you know. Yeah. So we have many of those crazy stories. And I think that most of us are sure that AI is also one of these breaking points now for what has happened for the last years. But of course, it is still up to us. I mean, tech is not there for tech. Tech is there for humans. And if humans are not ready to use the technology in the right way, it's going to take time. So this is about timing, this transformation a lot.
In your assessment, Anna, like why would somebody put in a contract, and I've seen the same thing, by the way, shall not touch AI. It's just like, you shall not do this. It's like a big order. You should not touch it. Why would they say that? What's the, you know, either is it sensitivity? Is it they're afraid? What is it?
Yeah, I think it's what I hear is that it's... They can say not now, maybe later. So that could be like one thing. We are not ready. We are not there yet. But the main thing I think is about compliance. It's about risk. It's about control. What will happen if AI get access to our content? Can we be sure that we can, you know, are we safe? Will someone else reach our data? I think it's a lot about control in general. So I think that is the main driver. But I've done it a few times and I did it like last month. I put it in the contract again to make sure that to be able to close a deal.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not a difficult one for us. It's just like to shut down some functionality. But yeah, I can feel it's a loss for them.
Are we still going through a trust phase?
I think so, actually. I think there is, yeah, but as I said, I think there is different kind of companies. And I mean, what could be the driver? I don't really know. It's probably about the management, the view on AI, how AI friendly, you know, the core company structure will be. I think that at least most of the people that I talk to, they are utilizing AI somehow in their workplace today. I mean, it's around somehow. They have some Copilot or some ChatGPT functions. They are like struggling to get the employees to use AI in their daily work and so on. But maybe it's the same thing with, I don't know, this might be a little bit philosophical, but I think that big shifts also sometimes people try to, you know, say or think that it won't happen, you know, to protect themselves. So maybe it's also like human based.
I tell you, like, there are many angles to look at AI from, you know, various perspectives, and each individual out there, they've got their own thing going on. You know, there are the people who don't trust the data. Where is it going? Who's using it? I don't want my data to be used in training other models, and somehow they have this idea in their mind. Anything they put in AI is going to end up on Google search. But there's what's real and what's not real. So I was meeting in, I was doing a panel discussion in meeting last few months ago, I guess, in Montreal. And there was this person, she's a professor at one of the local universities. And she came up and I, you know, during my talk, and I said, who's got a question? And this lady comes up and I got a question. And so what she said, you know, AI is bad for the environment. You know, we use a lot of energy, we should not be using AI. The reason I'm stating that is because depends on where you're sitting. If you are a policymaker, if you're a government employee, or you're, you know, a mobile app developer, or you're a gamer, we all have different views on how things should be used. One of the key fundamental that I'm really observing is that, you know, talking to you right now, it feels like innovation is coming from within the industry. Generally, innovation comes to us from outside the industry, generally. So there are many examples of those. Customers force us to go into one direction. The industry did not want to change. You talked about change earlier. They don't want to change. But the customer and the market shifts us to change, forces us to change. And then it becomes uncomfortable. But when innovation comes from inside of the industry, I guess it becomes predetermined, pre-envisioned, designed, thought about, and put it in a context where customer can accept it and market can accept it. The biggest deal right now is you've got like an entire industry. Some of us believe that we should shift. Some of us believe that we should hang on to what we're doing and continue doing what we're doing until somebody retire or somebody exit the business. So the problem for me is right now is that as I look at this is I would rather see innovation like Gridley and what you're doing with that company in coming from the industry out versus from outside the industry, because it's well thought out. You're designing it with, you know, preconceived notion that I'm going to have to serve a customer eventually. And you're right. Customers, markets, industry will shift, will continue, will come along because the technology is not going anywhere. I mean, AI is here for to stay, right?
Yeah. And I think also what I see very clear is that there is a willingness to change on a management level. It's a huge difference for me having like the C-level discussions with customers. If I have like a CTO or similar roles where we are discussing Gridley with them, it's like their need for AI is in general huge. They would like us to really show what the future looks like. You know, it's really about how much efficiency or quality increase could the platform deliver. But when we move into LSPs or into lock departments, I would say the dialogue shifts a little bit and it becomes more difficult. But still on LSP level, I would say that management in general, they want to shift, but they don't really know exactly how to do it. So it's a difficult transformation.
So how do you balance that? How do you balance innovation and operational discipline?
Yeah, what I try to do and how we operate right now is that I try to find the most AI-friendly partners that I can find out there. And shout out to everyone listening on this podcast as well. If you are an AI-friendly company within the industry, not depending on wherever you are or which role you play, or if you just are an individual. That is how I try to manage it. Try to find others that would like to collaborate with us on this. As I said, we are only the tech. We come with a platform. We come with a content management system. We come with the processes, the automations, and the AI. But we can't operate alone. We need to operate with our customers or with different kind of partners and partnerships. So, and it's starting to move in the right direction, of course. It's easier now than just 1 year ago. But as I said, we have taken our bet and I'm sure that we are moving in the right direction, but I hope that we are moving fast enough.
You know, in our industry, many people listening to this podcast will probably think, well, what about productivity? And so in a modern SaaS environment, such as Gridley, how do you measure productivity? What productivity means to you, I guess?
Yeah. So we have, for anyone that is super interested in deep diving into this, we have a lot of customer cases on Gridley.com, so you can move in there. But what we can see in general, I would say, is, of course, what customers shows us in those cases is a lot about efficiency to processes to work more smoothly or faster go to market and so on. So that is like the main efficiency lies. And then there is also about control. We shouldn't underestimate that. To have one source of truth, to be in control of your content, to be able to access the content in one place. And if you need to make any updates, you know exactly how to handle it in the platform. So a lot of efficiency, but also a lot of control. And what I also try to say when I talk to customers and other people in the industry is that localization is often seen like a cost center, as you mentioned, that likes come in the end, that we need also to run some translations or something. But I mean, localization should really be seen as a growth engine. That is what brings your product to market faster. And that is also a really, we haven't been able to measure that with a customer yet, but I hope we will be able to do that soon. I mean, to be able to scale a product fast, move into a new market and have it perform better than if you wouldn't have a professional localization process. That is probably the highest win with running your localization through a platform as Gridlib. So speed up the go-to-market process, get the product out there and make sure it's high quality. That is probably the highest value.
Absolutely. Now, we don't have much time left, so I want to make sure I address the innovation part and the pipeline for development down the road. Without getting into the secret sauce of the details of Gridly, Anna, would you mind walk us through what is your vision for development and innovation?
Yeah.
Going forward.
So, yeah. So right now, I would say that we have on development, we have two big priorities within the company. We call one of them enterprise readiness. And that is about we have a very flexible platform. We adapt it for our customers. And when we bring on new big global companies, we make sure that we adapt the product for their needs where needed. So we try to work super close with our customers. If it's about AI, if it's about specific workflows or integrations, it's super important for us that we support our customers. But the second part, and I don't think that you will be surprised by now, but that is that we have developed now and are developing our own AI studio. And I think that will be really exciting times. I think that that will change the way we view AI in the localization process partly. We are looking into a process and a studio where you can handle, you know, that where you have access to really good content, where you can really share your prompts, where you can, you know, preview results before applying them. Mm-hmm. It's more like an iterative way of working with the content than just like pushing it through a workflow. This is about iteration. I mean, you prompt, you run your processes, you need to adapt, you need to change, you need to, and this is also where I see the competence that I talked about in the beginning, to have someone that can orchestrate this process that is a bit different than the normal localization process, so to say, where it's more like a flow maybe. This is more iterative, ongoing, improving, trying out, adapting kind of thing. And we have a strong belief that this is the approach needed. I shouldn't brag about it, but we have done some amazing testing on this, both on translation, but also on AI QA stuff. We have been blown away about the results. But still, that is what we can, you know, do with tech. Someone needs to be able to run this machine as well. And I need those people around with clients, with partners, within my company. So AI is definitely the main focus area going forward. And to make sure that our new and existing customers get the kind of, customer treatment and integrations that they need to make sure that Gridly is the perfect fit for their organization.
Absolutely. How big is Gridly?
We have 150 customers, and we have about 45 employees today within the company. And then we have a lot of partnerships with different Absolutely. Companies supporting our business.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for giving me that information. Now, as we wrap up the conversation, I want to thank you so much for coming in, introducing us to yourself. We got to know you a little bit, and introduce us to Gridly, which is, I wish you a lot of success with that. It sounds like you have a lot of innovation on the go. I really love the idea of AI first, and we shouldn't be shy about that. Everybody uses AI, but nobody tells anybody that they're using AI, as there'll be a secret. I really like how you positioned it. It's upfront, it's there, and yes, we have a human to inject into the process. That's a key success to the formula. And I really love the orchestration idea that you talked about earlier. That's a key factor as well. Like, content's got to be coming from different directions. The key is to, how do we orchestrate it? How do we score it? How do we decide which model or which human or which machine to use to enhance it, to make it better, etc. So I'm really impressed with this conversation, Anna. I thank you so much for your time. Any last comments?
Thank you for having me. No, just thank you for having me. It's really interesting discussions. I'm so excited moving into this industry. So it was also really good to get some of your perspective on things during this call. So thank you so much.
Absolutely. And let's keep in touch. Never know. We may bring you back onto the show and give us an update on Gridly where you are. Hopefully you get a... I'm interested to see that innovation that you're working on. And you said you're impressed with the results. Maybe we come back and talk about that one as well.
I'd love to do that at some point.
Thank you so much, Anna. And for the audience, thank you so much for listening in. I really appreciate your time. If you're coming in on the audio channels, thanks for listening in. If you're coming on YouTube, thank you for watching us. I really appreciate your time. And if you don't mind, do me a favor, liking, sharing, commenting on this content. It really helps us. Thank you so much. And I'll see you at the next episode. Thanks, Anna.